So if you have a Bible, or if you don't have one, you can grab one in front of you. Matthew chapter 7, that's where we're going to spend some time this morning, in Matthew chapter 7. And while you do that, I want you to think about a time when you were the new person. And maybe some of you, that's this morning at this place, in this church, right? But think of a time when you were the new kid at school, or you were the new family at church, or the new guy at work, or you were the new kid in your neighborhood. And you just remember how it felt to be new somewhere, right? You spent a lot of energy trying to figure out the unspoken rules, right? And maybe you made a few mistakes. You're wondering if these people were your people or not, and maybe you weren't sure for a very long time. Maybe you spent time trying to remember names, repeating them over and over again, latching onto that one person who had a nice smile, and maybe it felt like there was a connection there. Maybe you awkwardly tried to make some conversation, and you have some great stories about that too. I have a lot of those stories. I remember my first year as a freshman in college. I went to Hope College in Holland, Michigan, and I went from Iowa, and everybody that I knew in the whole world lived in Iowa. And so when I came to Michigan, I didn't know anybody. And I remember just being pathetic and studying in my dorm room with the door open, just hoping that someone would come, just pop in and say hi, because I looked really interesting with my nose in the book, right? But I kept the door open just hoping that someone would come along and say, hey, you want to play Mario Kart? And I would say, yeah, and we'd be best friends, and the buddy music would play over top of it. It'd be awesome. Didn't happen. So, but I remember that thinking, I haven't had to make a new friend since I was in middle school. So I'm not even sure how to do this anymore, because everybody that I knew was in Iowa, and I'd lived in the same place for so many years, and I was kind of nervous, and I remember going to bed at night and thinking that moving to Michigan was the biggest mistake of my entire life. I remember thinking that, and I just wanted to go home, where I felt things were familiar. Home was where I knew that I belonged, right? At Hope College, they do this thing. They make you go to class on Labor Day. They don't give students or professors Labor Day off. The reason is because they found that if they send freshmen home with a 3-day weekend, most of them won't return. They'll just stay home. Seriously, true story. They actually make you go to school because they know that freshmen sense this deep loneliness and this desperation for community, and in the first few weeks of school, they're not able to get it, so they don't even send you home. They just keep you there. They tell you you can't leave, because they know that you just got to push through it. Loneliness is a scourge. It torments you. It taunts you. If you've ever felt lonely, you know that this is the case. When you feel lonely, you feel like you're separated, like you're a million miles from everyone. And here's the kicker. It's possible to be lonely and be surrounded by other human beings. It's possible to be alone, to be lonely, to feel separated and be in a crowd. It's a state of mind. And yet, one of the deepest longings inside of us is to connect with other people. It's a part of our DNA. It's part of what it means to be a human. We are social creatures. The reason loneliness hurts so bad is because you were created for community. God designed you to be connected to other people. God designed you to be known, not just on the surface level, but to be known in the deepest parts of yourself, to be known by others, and to know them in return. And when you don't experience that, you feel like something is missing, like something is wrong. And yet, creating community, these relationships with other people, it's very, very difficult. Because to do that, to cross that bridge that oftentimes separates us from other people, we have to face some really critical questions about what it means to be us and what it means to be a part of a community. Now, there are lots of questions we have to face, but I've sort of boiled it down to four questions. Here are the four questions that each of us has to ask when we're trying to figure out if we can belong or we can become a part of a community. The first question is, do I belong here? We're all doing this calculus, trying to figure out if these are our people. We're saying, am I wanted and are my gifts welcomed? Do they need me? Do they want me? Am I welcomed here? The second question that we ask is, all right, if I'm welcomed here, is it me that they really see? We want to know, do you see me? In other words, can I drop the mask that I put on this morning before I came to church, or before I went to work, or before I went to school? Can I take the mask off? And if I take the mask off, will you see me, and will I still belong here? Will I still be welcome if you see beneath the mask? That's the second question that we ask. Now, if you get that far, you're doing pretty good, but the third question can be a real problem. Can we disagree? Right? Can we disagree? Can we learn from each other and from our differences, or do we all have to be the same? Do I have to toe the party line, or can we disagree? Is it possible? What happens if we don't see exactly eye to eye on everything? And finally, if you get past that one, the question that wraps them all up is this one. Am I safe here? In other words, do I believe in the deepest part of myself that these people have my best interest at heart? Do I believe they care about me? Do they have my best interest at heart? These are four questions that we often ask. Sociologists tell us that there is an epidemic of loneliness in the United States right now. We've talked about this before here. People feel more isolated and alone and disconnected than ever, because it's getting more and more difficult to find community where the answers to these four questions are yes. It's very, very difficult to find yeses to these questions. So over the next 4 weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to look at these four questions and identify some of the ways that we can be the kind of community that says yes to these things, the kind of community that we were created to be a part of. So the first question we're going to deal with this week, do I belong? Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about belonging. It was actually a couple months ago. It was back in August. We talked about belonging because belonging is one of the core values at Harbor Life. And I introduced you to a song by Nicole Nordeman called Dear Me, where she sings this line. She says, sit at all the tables because Jesus eats with everyone. That whole album is worth listening to if you don't have it. So Nicole Nordeman, the song is called Dear Me, and she says, sit at all the tables because Jesus eats with everyone. And a few months ago, back in August, we kind of unpacked all the different times when Jesus eats with people he probably should not have been eating with, according to the social standards, right? Inside all of us is this 12-year-old trying to figure out which table to sit at in the middle school lunchroom. We're all longing to belong, and at the heart of every single person is this desire to be accepted, to be welcomed, to be loved. And the problem is that we don't always feel like we are accepted. We don't always feel welcome. We don't always feel loved. Sometimes we feel separated. Sometimes we feel isolated. Sometimes we feel distant. Sometimes we feel like we're on the outside of every single conversation we are a part of. We feel rejected by other people. It's one of the things that gets broken when this thing happened that we refer to as the fall of humanity, or when sin entered the world. The fall is how we talk about the break between what God created and intended and what you and I live in every single day. What God intended was for us to live in these communities of deep relationship with other people, where we feel connected to them. God creates Adam and Eve for connection because it's part of the original structure of creation. It's how God intended it. And yet what happens after the fall almost immediately is that we see this break in the relationship between Adam and Eve, these two humans that were on earth, and between Adam and Eve and God. What God intended is for us to be in deep connection with each other, in community, but we often experience a sense of rejection and isolation. And I probably don't have to convince you that that's the case. You all can probably point to times in your life when you've experienced that. Maybe it was in your own family. Maybe you felt rejection from your own family. Maybe it was at work. Maybe it was at school. Maybe it was even at church. We've all experienced rejection. And that's just a part of what it means to be broken, to be sinful, to live in this sinful creation that we're in. One of the things that sin does is that it isolates us from other people. Now, here's the interesting thing. We think about separation. Most of Jesus' earthly ministry was oriented around solving that exact problem. The problem of isolation from others and this experience of rejection. Jesus spent a lot of time focusing on that core human experience. Think about it. Jesus spent most of his time with people who experienced the most rejection by society. That's what got him killed, right? Because Jesus spent almost all of his time with the people that everybody else had written off. Why do you think he did that? Because Jesus was creating a new community that would transcend all the barriers that have typically determined who belongs at the table and who doesn't. He was sitting at all the tables to show us that everybody belongs at the table. Everybody who is willing to sit with Jesus and eat with him is welcome to sit with Jesus and eat with him. That's the consistent theme of his life. So he was creating this community around this idea that everybody who wants to is welcome at the table. Everybody who's willing to draw close to him can come close to him. And here's the thing. This community that Jesus was trying to create, it worked. Right? The Christian church has become the most multi-ethnic, multi-racial, multilingual, multi-class, multi-educational, multi-generational, multi-political community in human history. You cannot find another community that is more inclusive than the church. It worked. That's pretty awesome, right? Like, this is brilliant. And how it worked wasn't with some grand infrastructure. It was with Jesus closing the gaps that separate us from other people. With Jesus, everyone who's willing to sit at the table can become a part of the family. Because Jesus eats with everybody who's willing to eat with him. Now, the other day, one of my daughters asked me what heaven was like. And I was thinking about that, and I was remembering that in the Bible, one of the last images that the Bible uses to talk about what heaven is like is a big table, right? A gigantic table. Revelation chapter 7, verse 9, you can go look it up if you'd like to, but it's this giant table where every nation, tribe, people, and language are gathered together in the name of Jesus sharing a meal. Heaven is like a table where all the things that typically keep us separated, that make us feel rejected and alone, all that stuff, our language, our class, our education, our skin color, our finances, all that stuff, it melts away because Jesus' table brings us together and transcends all the stereotypical false things we use to keep ourselves separated from each other. Now, what if I told you that you don't have to wait for heaven to taste that kind of community? What if I told you that Jesus actually intended for that kind of community to happen here and now and not after you die? What if I told you that the things that separate us and make us feel isolated and distant from each other, that they don't have intrinsic power on their own? That those things that separate us from each other, they only have power because we give it to them. And Jesus showed us how to take that power away. All right, Matthew chapter 7. So in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, we find the most famous sermon in history. Jesus preaches it. A sermon that he preaches called the Sermon on the Mount. Now, it's this incredibly practical sermon. It gives really clear instructions on how to live your life well, which is one reason that it's awesome, like so amazing, because it's so practical. It's hard to live into, but it's supremely practical. Now, Jesus has been teaching for a while, and at the very end of the sermon in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus starts to teach about judgment, America's favorite pastime, right? Goodbye, baseball. Hello, judgment. We spend a lot of time doing it, and Jesus spends and reserves some of his most powerful words for this topic. So starting at the beginning, Matthew chapter 7, starting with verse 1, here's what Jesus says. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. All right, let's stop there for a second. So in the Greek, in which this passage was originally written, that word judge, which Jesus uses four times in two verses. You pay attention to that, right? Jesus uses this word judge four times in just two verses. That word judge is the Greek word krino. Krino literally means to separate. Judge, krino, means to separate. So let me read that passage again, translating that word krino as separate, because it gives a little bit different understanding of what Jesus was saying. Jesus said, do not separate, or you too will be separated. For in the same way that you separate from others, you will be separated, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Nothing kills belonging faster than judgment, because judgment separates. Judgment creates distance. When I judge others, what I'm doing is creating distance between myself and them. Judging creates distance because what it does is it reduces a person, a human being made in the image of God, it reduces a person to an object and that object's flaws. So when I look at you, all I see is your flaws. That's what judgment is. And by doing that, I'm separating myself from you. In other words, the more you see a person as an object for you to judge, the further distance you create between yourself and them. And the more I separate myself from other people, the more I lose contact with them. You see how that works? The more I judge, the less opportunity I have to be in contact with them. The more distance that's created between you and me, the less likely we are to have any kind of relationship at all. And ultimately, when I view the world through these judgmental lenses, ultimately, it's me who ends up all alone. See how that works? That's what Jesus means when he says, with the measure you judge, you will be judged. He's not saying that God's going to say, wow, you were kind of a jerk. I guess I'm going to do the same thing to you. That's how I used to read that passage. No, he's just describing the natural consequences of being a judgmental person. If you live your life in that way, you get what you want. If you want to separate yourself from everybody else, guess what? You can have it. And you will be lonely and miserable. The more you separate from others, the more you will be separated. That's why judgment and rejection destroy community and belonging. That's why Jesus just didn't do it. That's why all the times we read in the passage in Scripture, when you feel like he meets with somebody who you think, man, he probably should not be spending time with them, right? This is his philosophy of ministry. He doesn't want to separate. He wants to come close because he's got to get close to heal what's broken. In heaven, there's a table where everyone comes together. And if heaven is a table that brings everyone together, that closes the gap so that we can experience healing, then hell is a chasm that keeps people apart, that keeps people separated. Hell is judgment, krino, separation. Don't believe me? Listen to Jesus. Jesus tells a parable, a little story, a little allegory about what hell is like. He describes it as a rich man who is separated from a poor man with a chasm between them. The poor man is in heaven, and the rich man is in hell. Now, the moral of that story is not that rich people go to hell and poor people go to heaven. That's a bad reading of that parable. That's not what it means. The moral of that parable is that in life, the wealthy man constantly separated himself from the poor man. And in death, the two remain separated. The rich man gets exactly what he wants. He gets distance. But because the wealthy man separated himself from another human being who was the image bearer of God, he also separated himself from God. Hell is the natural conclusion of a life lived in judgment. It's what you get when you separate yourself from other people. It's the natural result of living that way. Now, here's the thing. People don't judge because they're jerks. Write that down. It's really important. Because that's what we think, right? Oh, that person's such a judgmental jerk. That's what we think. They do it because they're just mean. No. People judge other people because they are afraid. Because there is a deep fear inside of them. All sin, every single sin, is rooted in fear. The next time you notice someone doing something destructive, just ask yourself, what are they afraid of? And you'll probably come to the root of it. Okay, so let me show you what I mean by letting Jesus show you what he means. Continue reading with verse 3, Matthew 7, verse 3. Jesus says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take that speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." The root cause of judgment is fear of being judged. Isn't that interesting? The reason that we judge others is because we ourselves are afraid of being judged. The reason we reject others is because we're afraid of being rejected. When I have a plank in my own eye, when there's something that I'm ashamed of about me, I try to hide it by focusing on the speck in someone else's eye. It's actually a defense mechanism, right? I tell everybody, look over there. Don't look here, look over there. In fact, I tell myself, don't look here, look over there. It keeps me from having to deal with my own faults because dealing with my own faults is really, really painful. It's really painful. So what I do is I project judgment onto other people because I think that that will keep me from being rejected. I separate myself from them before they can separate themselves from me. You see how fear of rejection creates rejection? How fear of judgment creates judgment? How fear of distance creates the distance that it fears? How many marriages have just slowly shriveled up? How many friendships have quietly suffocated? How many parents have become estranged from their children because of fear that produced judgment that created separation? Judgment destroys intimacy. It kills community. It makes belonging impossible. And ironically, judging others leads to me feeling rejected and isolated and alone. Because ultimately, God says, you get what you want. You can achieve the separation that you always thought you wanted, and we end up miserable because you and I, we can only be loved up close. That's the truth. You can only be loved up close. Now, a warning. Jesus doesn't say that you should be foolish and trust everyone. You should not bring everyone close to you. That's not what he's saying. He closes his teaching on judgment by saying this in verse 6. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. In other words, it's wise to know when to put distance between yourself and some people. Good relationships are founded through good boundaries. You gotta have good boundaries, and you gotta know when to build a fence, when to protect yourself, when to create some distance. There are times when you should call evil, evil. There are times when you should call wrong, wrong. There are times when you should call a lie, a lie. There is a time to separate yourself from what is destructive and toxic and deadly. But, Jesus says, those times are rare. Most of the time, judgment and separation create more harm than good. They kill and steal and destroy. And Jesus came to close the gap, to mend that separation between you and God, between you and other people, and even between you and yourself. It's interesting. So immediately after Jesus, this is so profound. So immediately after Jesus finishes this teaching, this Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 8, listen to what happens next, immediately afterwards. Matthew chapter 8, verse 1. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him, and Jesus said, said to him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand, and what did he do? He touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Jesus closed the gap. He touched a man that society had deemed untouchable. Lepers weren't allowed to come close to other people. There were very strict laws that kept lepers at a safe distance from the rest of society. They had literally been judged and separated. That was their life, judged and separated. And to touch a leper was to risk making yourself unclean. It was to risk, first of all, catching leprosy, not to mention the social stigma attached to it. They were, in every sense of the word, untouchables. But Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. He mends the separation. He closes the gap. He condemns condemnation. Now, that's pretty awesome. But listen to this. The very next miracle that Jesus performs, he performs with a simple word. He heals a servant that's not even in his direct vicinity. He speaks, and a servant some distance away is healed. Which means that Jesus didn't have to touch the leper. He chose to. Why do you think that is? Because as John says in his gospel account of Jesus' life, "For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him." Any guesses as to what that Greek word that's translated as condemn is? It's krino, to judge, to separate. And that word that's translated as save there, it means to heal, to restore. It means to cure a fatal sickness. God did not send his son into the world to tear the world apart, but through him to cure our fatal separation from God and from each other and from ourselves. Jesus came to judge judgment. He came to condemn condemnation, and that sets us free to honestly face our own faults and our own sin. Because we don't have to fear condemnation. We don't have to fear judgment. So there's nothing to fear. You might as well face it. And as we become more aware of our own weaknesses and our own brokenness, and as we face our own faults, and as we embrace a life of humility, and as we experience the forgiveness and salvation that God offers in Jesus, as we experience ourselves coming closer to God, here's the amazing thing. We become more open to everyone else in their brokenness. As I face my own brokenness, I'm not so fixated on yours. Instead, rather than judging you, rather than separating myself from you, I begin to see our common fragility. I begin to see our communal desperation for a cure for this fatal separation that we all experience. I start to see you as a brother, a sister, a fellow child created in the image of our Father. And gradually, as I face my own sin, my own weakness, my own darkness, gradually judgment that I had for you and for myself, that judgment is replaced by compassion for you and for me. Strange as it may seem, our brokenness unites us if we let God's forgiveness replace judgment. Let me say that again. Because this is what the church is built upon. Our brokenness unites us if we let God's forgiveness replace our judgment. That's the church that Jesus came to create. Not trapped by our sin, not imprisoned by our shame, not destroyed by our failure, but together experiencing salvation and forgiveness and new life in a community following Jesus. Maybe you came here this morning feeling separated, feeling alone. Maybe you came here feeling judged, or maybe you came here feeling judgmental. Today, God invites you to come close. See, the thing is, God has already closed the gap. God's already healed the separation. But for you to experience it in your life for real, to actually experience it, you have to just open yourself up to it. You have to let down your guard, put down your defenses. Because God won't force healing on you. Right? God won't force it on you. God won't force himself near, but he's willing. He's already closed the gap. So maybe that means that you need to start with confession this morning. Maybe you need to deal with the plank in your own eye. Some of you need to confess to God and to some other person. Maybe you need to offer forgiveness to someone. Maybe you need to close the gap between you and someone else. Maybe you need to let go of judgment, or maybe what you need this morning is to hear God say, I don't condemn you. I've condemned condemnation. I did not come to condemn you. I came to bring you close. Maybe you just need to hear God say that. This morning, if you are ready to let God heal the divide in your life, then I want to invite you to come to the table, to the communion table. This table reminds us of the heavenly table where everything that used to separate us separates us no more because of the life and death and resurrection of Jesus.